From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. It's the second hour of the show, and of course that means that we get to get into the news roundup. With me as always, we got Matt Butler here. Matt, welcome back to the show.
Hey, hey.
All right, so we're going to get into this, but before we get into the news roundup, a fun thing that we do every night, we play you a trivia clip. At the start of the show, you guys are guessing on the text line. A bunch of you got this because it's really, it's a well-known movie, but I actually thought this was a little sneakier, a little tougher than some of the ones we've been doing recently. I'm going to play it for you, Matt. I haven't told you what this is. Nope. You heard it earlier, but you haven't told me if you got it right away. So I'm going to play it for you now. I'm going to let you guess, and then I'll tell you what movie it's from. All right, here it is. Good luck.
Back in 82, I used to be able to throw a pigskin a quarter mile.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious. How much you want to make a bet I can throw a football over the mountains? If a coach would have put me in fourth quarter, we'd have been state champions, no doubt. No doubt in my mind.
All right, time
is now. I have been striking out. All wrong
right.
Sport.
All right, I'll give you. Yeah, this is this. Yeah, right. They're definitely about football. That was Uncle Rico from Napoleon Dynamite.
Oh, and I love that movie.
Do you remember that character? How funny that character was.
Yeah, Uncle Rico. Yeah.
So this was inspired because yesterday on the show we played this clip. Russell Wilson released this like hype video. He's getting all pumped up. He's going to play for the Steelers.
Yeah.
And oh my gosh, this was so funny. I'm just going to replay this. Replay this for you right now. So he releases this hype video and he is running all around and it's like set to cool music and stuff, which is great. He's just getting excited. This is what that sounded like.
G Block. All we know is red rum, red rum, red rum, red rum, red rum. G Block. All we know is red rum, red rum, red rum, red rum.
So he looks fine. He looks like a good player. I don't know what it is. Russell Wilson cannot do anything and release it on the internet without people just piling on. They just have decided this guy is a guy we are going to make fun of,
yes,
no matter what. Especially Denver Broncos fans, because he was just released by the Broncos and they had to pay him a ton of money and it didn't work out. This Russell experiment did not work out at the Broncos, but somebody pointed out, they go, this has serious Uncle Rico vibes, which is why we played that. Because you remember he was like wishing for the glory days of football and he had those videos of him like throwing a football in the middle of an empty field living in his van.
So what is Russell Wilson going for? Okay, first it's Seattle, then it's Denver. So is he going to tick off Pittsburgh too?
I mean, I would hope Steelers fans. I hope not for Steelers fans. This guy who posted online, handle is Mile High Greco. He posted, that's weird. He usually runs around in circles and then gets sacked. Which that was pretty funny. Yeah, it was great. All right, let's get into the roundup. News roundup. We talk about all the other shows. We just play quick clips from the other shows. We boil their 3 hours down to often like a minute, minute 30, and then we talk about what they're talking about. On Seattle's Morning News, Angela Poe Russell was talking about the value of students getting a varied language experience. Let's hear about it.
Okay, you may be thinking that with club sports and the rigor of high school, having more than a main interest just isn't practical or possible. Trust me, I've heard it. But as the saying goes, where there's a will, there's a way. My daughter's high school musical just wrapped, and I was struck by the number of athletes who participated. I wanted to understand how this works. Well, it's the school's policy to encourage exploration as long as possible. So I was told the theater department works with the athletic department to sync up schedules, and the coaches are flexible for important rehearsals and performances, and vice versa. It's adults working together for the benefit of the students. Imagine that. You know, this isn't the only school to operate this way, by no means, but honestly, every student should have an opportunity to explore a wide range of interests. Think of it like cross-training for life. I totally get at some point in high school, a student may need to specialize, but keep in mind, at least when it comes to sports, only 7% of high school students will play in college. What do we want the others to take away from those years? How do we want them to show up in life? Keeping kids in boxes isn't a strategy that's going to prepare them for this rapidly changing world. They need adaptability, critical thinking, and resilience that develops when they step out of their boxes and ultimately out of their comfort zone. That is where true learning begins. And isn't that our job to push them there?
Did you have a pretty varied learning experience?
Yeah, I did. It was pretty well-rounded. Got to try a lot of things to find out where I fit. But yeah, I think that's healthy. But to her, some of her earlier points in that commentary, she was talking about how in high school, sometimes you can get so typecast where you're just the jock or the nerd or whatever, and how important it is to kind of mix up your experiences.
Yeah, I found that I was kind of, I had a unique experience in high school because I went to a private school until eighth grade. So when I got to high school, we called it secular high school when I got there. When you go to like private schools, especially religious private schools, I went to a Christian private school. So when I got to high school and I went to public high school because I really, really loved playing baseball. I loved it. It's like all I wanted to do and all I wanted to, even any possibility of playing baseball, I wanted to take it. And so they didn't offer baseball in high school at my private school I was going to. And so I went to the public school because I wanted to play baseball, which I did. And I loved it until I got cut. Not fun. But when I got to school, I didn't have any friend group at all. I didn't know a single kid at this massive high school that I started going to that had like over 2,000 kids. It was it was just huge, 4A, you know, just a big, big school. So I was kind of forced to, and I look back now and I go, oh, this was actually really kind of it worked to my benefit. I was forced to kind of, like a social butterfly, float around, find any group that would take me.
Yeah.
Because in high school, it's all about finding the group that you fit in with. Because everybody's like so scared of not fitting in. So I got to be friends with, you know, the first day there, I got kind of freaked out that I wasn't going to have any friends. And I actually kind of got in the crosshairs of maybe a kind of a bullier group. And so I quickly went and sat down with a group of kids that was very much into like, you know, Dungeons and Dragons and, you know, the Lord of the Rings books.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I love that stuff. But then when I started playing sports, then I got to be buddies with the sports guys. And then eventually you just kind of at some point just kind of figure out how to like fit in with everybody.
Yeah.
And, you know,
it's learn how to be a part of a community.
Yes, absolutely. So I would also highly recommend just spread yourself around as much as you can. Find out what you like. Don't try to be, you know, shoved into one thing. But also, high school is such, even though it's like a really informative like experience and, you know, it really does set the tone for a big chunk of your life. Yeah. It is such a small part of your life.
Right.
I mean, when I look back now and I think about like what a small part of life high school is, even though we blow it up in our brains.
Right. At that point in your life, it seems so big. It seems like if one person isn't your friend, it feels like your whole world has ended.
Absolutely. Yeah. But, you know, like in reality, as much as you can get this across to your kids, it is such a small part of your life that just like, you know, keep your eyes on the horizon, keep looking towards the future because
this too shall pass.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. And it's such an awkward time, too. Indeed. Like people are having like skin issues.
Yes.
And just like there's no
growing
time in
into
life.
Yourself. It's so awkward.
It's so awkward. Oh, my gosh. I would never want to go back there. All right. Let's see. Let's move on to Gian Ursula. Let's see here. A growing number of students are pursuing degrees in environmental science. Is this a good idea? I hope this is more entertaining than it sounds. Is
I
it?
Don't know. Give it a try.
All right, let's find out.
The kids saving the world. Well, at least that's the goal for these students at schools in our region. Environmental studies is one of the fastest growing degrees, and students at UW, Washington State, University of Idaho, and Oregon State are all flocking to this program. According to King 5, Washington State University School of the Environment grew from 428 students in 2019 to 525 students in 2023, a 23% increase.
Yeah.
And at Oregon State, the same program. Students pursuing a bachelor's in environmental sciences grew from 466 to 752. That's a 61% increase. UW seen a 50% increase. Gee, would you tell your kids to pursue a career in environmental studies?
No, because I wouldn't know what to tell them where to go and to do anything. I don't have any experience about and what to do. I don't know that environmental science is that being a common thing. Now, I love it. Because I do know that we have had a past of a lot of people really not understanding what's going on in our environment. I'm just now figuring out compost, recycle, you know what I mean? Garbage. Because sometimes, Ursula, when they get like three.
I would just recommend whatever it is that you are passionate about, you should go for. But also understand that you can study this, but you'll end up working, you know, at a Starbucks or whatever if you don't have an idea as to what it is that you want to do with that degree.
Oh, that ended pretty quick.
Yeah.
So would you actually advise your kids what to study or would you
that's
just like
kind
stay
of where
out of
I
that?
Wanted to go with this?
Yeah.
It's like I don't think I would want them to find something that they were passionate about and then help them look at how they could turn that into a career.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a particular thing that I would try to nudge them towards. And that's kind of my question for you with, you know, four boys. Is there some sort of ideal or a major you would hope they would not pursue?
You know, there's some majors that just don't tend to find quick employment.
Yeah.
I mean, there's like, you could be a philosophy major, but then you do find you're like limited in maybe some of your career
options.
You
get some depth in your knowledge, but it may not be as easily translatable to paying jobs.
Yeah, like, but I also, I know people who have philosophy degrees who have been very successful. I guess the point is, it really almost doesn't matter what you study in college.
Right.
I mean, that's my real belief, is like, once you get out into the world and you get experience, and unless you're trying to become a lawyer, there's a certain track that you should follow if you're trying to become a lawyer. There's a certain track you should follow if you're trying to become a doctor
or a dentist. Right, if something's highly specific, scientific, technical.
Yeah, but like the rest of it, it almost doesn't really matter.
It's just more important that you're learning how to learn.
Learn how to, you know, get excited about something, learn how to study, learn how to explore things, learn how to make connections, because ultimately that's what gets you hired. It's networking 100%.
True.
They should have here's a great idea for colleges.
Yeah.
They should have a course called networking and they should just teach people how to ingratiate yourself with people you want to work with. And that's almost 100%.
And it was my biggest obstacle entering this business, because I was a very introverted, shy kind of person, believe it or not. And I didn't know those office politics, as it were.
Yeah.
And didn't know that.
Would
and
you
it would
agree
have
with
helped.
That, though? Like, that networking is so
that
vital.
That would be great. Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it's a huge help. All right, Jack and Spike, 10 acres of Seattle are for sale. Only $1.5 million. That sounds like a pretty good deal. Or is it?
Hey, everybody. Guess what? There's a $1.5 million lot in North Seattle. It's 10 acres. Big old lot. You can put a lot of houses on that. Only problem is that it's the Crown Hill Cemetery, so you're going to have to write a lot of apology letters if you start putting in houses. Am I right or am I right?
Well, I'm amazed that this property is available.
Dear Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
You thought this through.
I recently purchased the Crown Hill Cemetery for the low, low price of $1.5 million, and I regret to inform you that your great-great-great-grandfather, Abraham, shall be removed from his grave and shall be placed in a U-Haul, at which point he will be returned to you.
To you. How?
To you. At my expense.
At my expense, of course. And whichever format you'd like.
In whichever format you
would like. Respectfully, would like to have the body presented to you in. That's good.
And I just want to let you
check
know.
Check the box below.
Check the box below. And please include a most recent address so timely delivery can be undertaken.
When
and
someone will be home to receive the package.
And I am
so
very sorry that I have decided to desecrate this land for my own corporate capitalist gains. Now, how did this happen? That's the way that I would write that letter, by the
way.
So basically, the longtime owner, the business went into receivership, which is not good. But here's the thing about cemeteries is, with cemeteries, such an antiquated way to hold bodies in a place.
That's weird. These are weird clips to say, but they're kind of fun. Would you buy a cemetery for $1.5 million?
Well, I don't need that much land, and I don't have $1.5 million, so I don't think I would.
I find it so strange, the idea that you could buy a cemetery.
Well,
you're buying a bunch of dead people.
Well, one of the things that I have looked at is in like Scotland, they sell old churches, beautiful architectural buildings. People turn them into homes.
Yeah.
But a lot of times the caveat is you have the land adjacent, which is a cemetery, and you cannot touch it.
Yeah, you can't
Literally, your backyard is literally a cemetery.
Yeah. No, it's definitely strange. All right, let's get to John and Sherry. They were talking about, you might want to stop asking your kids this question. What question? Well, you're just going to have to listen and find out.
This one comes out, it's somewhat counterintuitive. It says, stop asking your kid how they feel. Huh? Because most parents think, oh no, I always got to be checking in on my kid and his feelings. Yeah.
Yeah, they're saying that doing this all the time. Are you enjoying your ice cream? Did you have fun today? Do you like to go to the toy store? That all of these things puts too much emphasis on their emotions and their feelings. And that if they think that they're always going to be checked in on, they believe that the ultimate goal is all about their happiness, and that's what we're all living for. It also keeps them dwelling on their feelings. What you should be telling them is that feelings change. Feelings come and go. Sometimes they're not so good. Sometimes they're really good. And that will give them a more realistic approach to living. Because it says most adults value happiness. But if you ask anybody at any given time, they're really generally not that happy. They're fine. They're getting through it. It's okay. But happy is stuff that is fleeting. You're happy for a little while, and then you're not happy. And to teach the kids that they always, you're always checking. Are you happy? Are you happy? Are you happy? That's too much pressure.
I think that's actually really good advice. I was watching a clip from Bill Maher the other day, and I think we even played it on the show. And he was basically saying, like, this hyper focus these days on trying to trying to like categorize everything and put everything into a box, and to say like, oh well, if you're not feeling good, it's because you have seasonal affective disorder, which means that you're clinically depressed, which means that you need this. Like, there is clinical depression. There are people who need like drugs for certain things, but not everybody needs these things, you know? And I think he was even saying that like the vast majority of people who take some of these medicines get them from other places. They're not actually prescribed these medicines. They're actually like figuring out a way to acquire them some other way.
Interesting.
Which is interesting. Yeah. So I think people, I also think it like kind of makes it easier for folks to think that, oh, I have this problem. It kind of excuses you from having to do some of the work to make yourself feel better.
Yeah, possibly. And although some people take it and use it as a tool to learn more and to go through therapy and to work on it constructively.
Yes, absolutely.
Also, it depends on your
leanings, that can happen too. But yeah, with my kids, that's great. I think I'm going to take that advice. I'm going to stop asking them how they feel so much.
Well, for me, that was just called growing up. Nobody cared.
Yeah, they did things a little differently when you were
back in my day.
Raised in the 80s and the 90s. All right, that's it for News Roundup. Thank you guys for listening. We got a ton more coming up on the show, so stick around. We're going to be right back here on Cairo Nights.
You're listening to Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. I'm Jake Skorheim, of course. Welcome to the show. And I have a very special guest with me. It's been a while since she's been on the show. Welcome back, Mickey Gomez.
Yay!
Cairo News Radio reporter, content creator, all that great stuff.
Yeah.
Welcome.
I'm happy to be here.
I know, it's been a while.
It has. I thought you didn't love me anymore.
No. A lot of love coming from me.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
But you have an interesting story. I jumped at this because I was like, oh yeah, I have a family.
Yeah.
I totally understand budgeting and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have an interesting story that I don't know that I fully buy what these people are saying. So why don't you set it up for us, then we can chat about it.
Right. So it's on MyNorthwest.com. And according to a recent study by Smart Asset, financial advisors tell us that a single person in Seattle has to make about $120,000 to live comfortably here in the city. And if you are a working adult, married with two children.
Okay.
It takes about $284,000 to live comfortably. And that means that we are ninth in the nation when it comes to affordability and being able to live comfortably in a big city.
So there are only 8 cities ahead of us where it is more expensive to live, just to live your normal life. Not even like, they're not even saying like an extravagant life, just to survive in the city.
Right. New York City comes in at number 1. San Jose is number 2.
San Jose is surprising me, but I guess it's a nice area.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very nice. The Bay Area. Very nice. Santa Ana. Most of these places are California.
Yeah.
Boston, Massachusetts came in at number 5.
They're all coastal.
You need like $319,000 to live comfortably there.
How much
there?
Is New York? Like, how much do you need in New York?
Yeah. In order to live in New York comfortably, you need to be making about $318,406 as a married couple with 2 children.
With 2 children. Okay.
Mm-hmm. You know, and if you're single, $138,000 to $140,000.
It's those kids that really they say
it's
get
those
you.
Doggone kids,
it's
man.
Doggone kids.
They're expensive.
So $280,000 for Seattle.
Yeah.
You and I were talking about this a little bit off the air, and I think that the important thing is, these are just estimates. They're not saying that, like, you know, this is a requirement.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think for anybody listening who is a normal person, most people hear those numbers and they go, oh, man, like, I'm really not stacking up. That's a lot of money.
That's a hefty income.
A very, very high percent earner if you're making $280,000 a year.
Yeah.
But what you could do is you could also, there's other ways that you can live your life happily, making far less than that.
Yeah.
And save a ton of money. Like, one of the things you can do, the most obvious one, and this is one that I've chosen to do, I don't live in Seattle.
Yeah.
I commute into work
as well. I still live in King County, but we don't make what they're saying that you should make comfortably, but we're just under that.
Yeah.
And
But still, yeah. you got to figure out what you're going to.
And that's not my income, by the way. I'm married to a medical provider. She's got a great practice. I mean, she works her butt off, you know, and then you get my little income in there. And so that kind of bumps us up.
Every
but still,
bit these days, every bit
every
helps.
Every bit counts. That's
every
right.
Every bit helps.
So I agree with you in that you don't necessarily have to live in Seattle proper. Like, if you are willing to make the commute and just live right outside of the city, you're going to find some more affordable housing.
I've had this discussion with a bunch of folks, but you know, we've talked about this on the show before. Mm-hmm. This idea that you have to live in the city and it you know, that people want to be able to buy houses in the city. Mm-hmm. I understand the desire to want those things, but nobody's entitled to just have those things just because they want them.
Like, yeah.
I work in the city. It would be great to not have to commute, but I knew that if my wife and I, when we decided we wanted to buy a house, buying a house in Seattle at the time was not feasible for us.
Right.
And so back in 2020, we went, hey, you know what? We need to start looking somewhere else. Years ago, we moved out of the city. We moved out when we first had our first kid because we were like, you know, we want more neighborhood experience.
Yeah.
We want, you know, parks where we feel a little bit more comfortable walking the kids around.
We want space.
We want space. And if God willing, if we can get a yard, that would be fantastic.
Yeah.
And so we made that decision, and then we moved up to Snohomish County. Never looked back. We love it. We just, like, would never want to live anywhere else now. But it's very, very expensive to afford a house in Seattle.
Yeah, it is.
And so, like, you know, for anybody who out there is listening, considering, like, oh, I just can't possibly make it happen. Well, no, that's not true. And don't tell yourself that. And don't undercut yourself, because you can make it happen. You can get everything you want. It just may not be exactly as you're envisioning it.
You're absolutely right. When we were looking at a home, and we were looking at homes here in Seattle, I just kept throwing up in my mouth. And I know that that's a disgusting, you know, analogy, but that's literally what would happen every time I would go and see a home that would have everything that we were looking for. $1.2 million, $1.3 million, $1.5 million.
Yeah.
Oh, this is $1 million. It's a fixer upper. Give me a break. So then my real estate agent said, hey, let's go look at this city. It's still King County, you know, and it's incorporated King County. Let's go take a look. And I was like, nope, 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 nope. And finally I looked and I went, oh, this checks off.
Isn't that a funny feeling?
Yes, it is. And it checked off everything that we were looking for.
Yeah.
2-car garage, backyard, 4-bedroom,
yep.
3 baths, open concept,
all the
deck,
things, all the things,
all the freaking things, $630,000.
That's pretty great. That's really great.
But I had to make some concessions.
Sure.
Now I have a 26-minute commute into work every morning.
But you know what? I drive 35 minutes in every day. And it's just a thing that I have to do. I add it into my day.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy to do it because I like where I'm coming home and I'm living.
Yeah.
Like, I like my neighbors. I love my neighbors. I love the community that we're in.
Mm-hmm.
I love that I feel confident and safe, that my family is safe. Like, that's the reason that we moved out of Seattle originally.
And we feel safe too. Like, I, you know, it's really interesting. And I know that we have such a big homelessness crisis here in the city of Seattle. We've lived in Capitol Hill. We lived in Madrona, you know, so we've experienced Seattle life, and almost everywhere, all the little parks had people living in tents. So it made it very difficult for me to want to take my kids. Yeah. But in our neighborhood, none of that.
Yeah. Me neither.
None of it.
None of it.
Yeah.
We were living across the street from Green Lake. We were renting a place, probably paying way too much in rent. And we were living across the street, and my wife would go and walk through the park when we had our first kid. And she would, like, oh, got to watch out for needles.
Yeah.
And when you start, like, thinking in terms of, like, needles and things like that, you just, like, the decision, once you're a parent, like, the decision becomes very, very easy to make. And then once we, like, moved out, like, I feel like a preacher. Get out of town.
Like a representative.
I do. I feel like I just want to share this good news to people that they should go and discover some of these other great areas that we have. Don't think that you have to be downtown, paying downtown prices, living the way that people have to live downtown.
Yeah.
You don't have to do it. Like, there's a better life out there.
There's some amazing communities out there. Not only that, but local restaurants that don't charge the same amount that Seattle restaurants charge.
Oh, my gosh. The prices that people pay here?
Yeah.
God, we're so simpatico.
Yeah, and what are the reasons why people, I mean, think about where people shop. They still go to some of those fancy grocery stores. We don't do that. I'm surprised those fancy grocery stores still exist.
How can they exist? How much money do these people have that they can spend $10 on a thing of eggs?
$5.99 for an apple.
That's insane.
I couldn't believe it. I'm like, I'm going to the Trader Joe. I'm going to the Trader Joe's. I'm buying a 69 cent gala.
Isn't it funny that we've reached this stage of our life where we're just like talking about the price of apples and eggs?
Right. But I'm just like, how are people? No. You don't have to live in the city of Seattle and pay those prices.
I know.
You move out.
Move out.
Not only that, you don't have to eat out all the time.
Don't eat out.
You don't. You could take transit.
City is for young people. Like, that's how I honestly feel. I lived in Seattle for 10 years when I was young and before I had kids. And then once I grew up and I became an adult and I wanted to start gaining some wealth, I wanted to quit giving my money to the city because it's expensive. And I said, you know what? I want to have money someday. I'm going to go somewhere where I can hold on to some of that money.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. And I'm so glad that I did.
So what are some of the communities that you think are more affordable than Seattle? I mean, I know you say you live up in Snohomish.
I live up in Snohomish, which I love. Mm-hmm. A ton of people are moving up to like the Marysville area.
Yeah.
Down south. There's so many of our listeners, like a vast number of our listeners live down in the Tacoma area. There's a bunch of great little neighborhoods.
Normandy Park, which is where I live.
Normandy Park.
Federal Way is really building up. I mean, and hopefully next year they're going to have the train east side, ready.
The east side's really expensive, but it rivals Seattle for price. So like if you can find a place there, God bless you, but it is really expensive. But it does have those neighborhood things that you and I were just talking about, where you feel very confident that you're not going to have to run into things that you don't want your kids to run into.
They're building up new apartments up north, Linwood, like when that Linwood exchange.
Linwood's exploding.
So you could take the train once that's completed, which I know they're already practicing. You know, if you're driving on I-5 northbound and you're like, what? Is the train open? You can see them practicing. There. And once that light rail opens up to Linwood, I mean, man.
I know. It's going
to
be.
Can you imagine the affordability you're going to get living in Linwood, being able to take the train?
Tell you what, Linwood prices have already started skyrocketing because people know that the train's coming. And so like anywhere within 3 miles of those train stations.
Right, right. But that's what happens.
That's what happens. But whatever. That's fine.
People do you believe the numbers though, Jake?
280,000 to live comfortably in Seattle? Yeah. No, I don't believe those numbers. Yeah. I don't think you need that.
How much do you think you need?
I think probably you could live comfortably in Seattle for like, you know, 150, 160. I think you could cut 100,000 off of that number.
I'm part of a mom's group that lives here in Seattle, and there are a lot of moms in that group that talk about how they make about 150, 175, family of four.
Doing
and
good.
And they make it work.
Yeah.
They make it work.
That's the important thing everybody who has a family understands. You just make it work. For wherever you're at, you figure it out. And so these numbers, these are cuckoo numbers. I don't like these numbers.
I want to know what the person or what the organization means by living comfortably. Like, what does that mean? Going to concerts? Does that mean like,
I think it means shopping at those three-letter grocery stores we were just talking about.
Yeah.
I think it means going out to eat at nice restaurants. I don't think it means saving any money. I don't think that's what it means, that's where I'm at right now. I'm like, I just don't want to waste my money. That's the phase I'm at. I hate wasting money.
I do too.
I wasted so much of it when I was young. And now I'm just like, I'm just going to scoop up as much as I can.
And you know what? My son was really smart. He was like, ooh, I want to download this TV app and I want to be able to watch shows on this TV app. And he looked at it and he goes, Mom, it's $79 a month. He goes, that's 80. He goes, 80 with tax. He times that by 12. Yeah. It's over $600 a year.
Yeah.
He goes, I don't need that. I'm yes.
That's over $900 a year.
Right. So I was like, you're right, son. So are you going to get the app? And he goes, no.
Good for him.
Good for you. That's what I said. I'm like, you're learning how to save already.
I love it. All right. Mickey Gomez, thanks for coming in.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
All right. We got a lot more coming up. Stick around. We're going to be right back here on Cairo Nights.
You're listening to Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. All right, this is a really like cotton candy, ridiculous story, but I'm excited to tell you about it because I think this is exciting. Do you guys remember the movie The Neverending Story? It's got that great soundtrack. So why am I playing the Neverending Story theme song, a movie that came out the year I was born? Actually, the movie came out in 1984. The book it was based on came out in 1983. It was a smash hit. Everybody loved it. The movie was then made into The Neverending Story in 1984. I think it was very successful, although the author of the book apparently did not like the adaptation. They are now making another one. I hope that they feel better about this one. They're making another Neverending Story. I knew this was going to happen. I assumed it would at some point. It is now going to be, I think it's going to be more than one movie, too. They're going to adapt the movie. It's going to be more than one. It's going to be made into multiple movies. This is a very exciting thing in my house because recently I had the opportunity to show my kids The Neverending Story. I didn't know how they'd feel about it. There's some really like, I don't know, they're kind of, there's some creepy stuff in that movie. I didn't know if my kids would like it, but they really, like really, really liked it. And they thought it was fun and funny. And I just like at the end of the, I mean, how great is this? You guys remember this at the end? We got the child empress and you got the Atreyu and Bastion screaming out the empress's name at the end. That's how, I mean, the engagement between the reader, the kid in the reading the book and the story that he's seeing in his head, it did pretty good. I mean, it made sense. I liked it.
It's only a story. It's not real. It's only a story. Why don't you do what you dream, Bastion?
But I can't. I have to keep my feet on the ground.
Call my name. Bastion. Please. Save us. All right. I'll do it. I'll save you. I will do what I dream.
And of course, he saves her from the nothing and the whole thing. It works out great. And the horse that everybody's sad about dying early on, you see him being ridden again. It's a great movie. Really great. It really opened up my eyes, actually. All these like great adaptations, these movies. I mean, I know I said earlier that the author didn't like it, but, you know, whatever. I mean, what does he know? I liked the movie. I thought it was great when I was a kid. It really opened up my eyes that adaptations are so much better than the original books, right? Isn't that what they always say? They always say that the movie version is better than the books. No, nobody says that, of course. I have not read the book. I am now inspired to go and try reading the book because I bet you it's actually pretty good because the movies are generally slightly worse than the original stories. So I will check the book out after this. So if you are a fan of Neverending Story, get excited because it's coming back. All right, we got a lot of stuff to get to. The third hour of the show is coming up. That's always the best hour of the show where we can just kind of hang out, let our hair down. And I hope you stick around for it. We're going to be right back here on Cairo Nights.